Welcome back to Around the 412. We are part of the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I am Tyler, and with me as always is my co-host, Smitty. As you can tell, if you're watching on YouTube, the man's expression is very depressing. Welcome back to another edition of Misery Monday. Smitty, how are you feeling right now?
I'm trying to put on a smile, at least a smirk. I'm trying to give the people something. not a good performance from the Steelers against Cincinnati. To put it lightly, we're going to get into it in much more detail. Let's start with something that we haven't really talked about much on here, though, recently, and that's the Pittsburgh Pirates. I want to bring up one thing about them because I have a question for you. I have a question for the people in regards to this. So they bring back Yoshi Tsutsugo on a one-year, $4 million deal, a guy that has been was brought over, pretty good hitter in his time with the Pirates, did cool off a little bit there towards the end of the season. I love the idea of bringing him back for another year and seeing if maybe they did find something there. Completely fine with that, especially from an offensive standpoint. But defensively, he was kind of positionless. They couldn't really find a home for him. They tried him in the outfield. That was disastrous. They tried him at first base. I think there's a lot of work to go there as well. But what does it mean for Colin Moran, if anything, do you think? A guy that's going to arbitration, his projected ARB number is around $4 million, right around what Tsutsugo was making. So they're going to tie up $8 million into two first basemen if they see Yoshi as a first baseman, which it sounds like they do. I mean, do you think that this means anything for Colin Moran?
If they see him as a first baseman, I definitely think they do. I think the Pirates are in a situation where they're not going to pay both guys around the same number to play the same position when one's going to play more than the other, unless they play Tsutsugo elsewhere, because we know Colin Moran is not going back to third base. He's stuck at first base or not on the team. And
I'm mad he even said that, because the idea of it just...
Well, yeah. I mean, we got Cabrian Hayes now. We don't have to worry about third base. Mm-hmm. But, I think that... It's tough because Colin Moran is a guy that over the past few years, I think he's become a secret fan favorite, and I think he's performed well as a Pirate, especially for the majority of last year. I thought he was performing pretty well. But at the same time, so was Tsutsugo. And we did mention that Tsutsugo tailed off during the end, but he still finished with about a 350 on-base percentage, which isn't too bad. And what this team is looking for, that'll be good enough. So if they're going to be making the same number and Colin Moran's going to be making around $4 million in arbitration, then I would look for the Pirates to either try to move him, or I don't know if they would release him, but I just don't think they can afford to have two guys making the same money at the same position and not being able to play this at the same time.
Yeah, see, I think that I actually think that we are going to see both of them on the roster. And it's because I think that we will see, first off, like, the money part should not be an issue. I don't care that they're both making $4 million. Like, if you see one of them as the best option off the bench on a day where they're not starting, I'm completely fine with that best bench option making $4 million. I guess what I'm getting at. I also think maybe we do see Yoshi sparingly in the outfield in a pinch. I also think maybe we see a DH in the NL. You know, who knows what's going to come from this work stoppage in the CBA contract talk. So who knows? But I think that we do see both these guys on the Pirates roster. I don't think to go based off what you were saying, though, I think the only thing that I could see with Moran would be, I think that they're definitely going to go through the process with him, paying the $4 million, but then maybe you do see them explore a trade. I definitely don't think he's just like, they release him or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Or don't, you know. We'll see how it plays out, but I am happy to see Yoshi back in the fold with the Pirates. I think that, you know, they took a chance on him. I think that it relatively paid off well for them last year. And let's just, again, continue to see if we got something there and if he can develop defensively at first base. Who knows?
Yeah,
because there's nothing at first base in the system. So.
Yeah, and I know that Clint Hurdle is not the manager of this team anymore, but I know that Colin Moran a lot of the time was held out based off of who was pitching in the game. At least earlier in his career, his tenure with the Pirates. I'm not sure about last year. I'll be honest, the Pirates are so bad.
Lefty matchups and stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention to that kind of stuff because the Pirates are just so bad. but they're both lefties, so I don't know if that will change anything. Like, because it's not like you could play one against righties, one against lefties if they're
opposite. Won't have a platoon, or at least a traditional platoon situation. If you're platooning them, it's not because a righty on lefty and lefty on righty or anything like that. So
I gotta say, I gotta agree with you that it really shouldn't matter if they are both making $4 million. And in the grand scheme of things, $4 million is not a lot of money when it comes to Major League Baseball. And I understand the Pirates, small market system, but they're not paying anybody else. Like, nobody else has a big contract. They can afford to do it. Now, whether they do it, I'm not so sure, because you and I both know how the Pirates operate. They like to spend as little as they can, but maybe that's just, we're used to Neil Huntington's system. We're still early on in Ben Sherrington's regime as GM, so maybe it'll be a little different with him. They'll start to pay players a little bit more. Still waiting on that Brian Reynolds extension, you know what I'm saying? But
I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah, as far as it goes, I think they should pay both guys because they're both productive. No matter who's out there, they're going to, at least offensively, they're going to be good.
And that's the thing for me. It's like, with a team that's struggling to find production at the plate as much as the Pirates have, you need both these guys. I feel like, you know, where's the power coming from if it's not from Colin Moran or Yoshi? And those guys really haven't showcased all that much, but the very little that they have is more than anybody else on the roster. So I think that they need both those guys in the fold next year. Curious to see what you guys think in the comments. So please let us know if Yoshi coming back for another year, you think impacts Colin Moran anyway. What I will say lastly about Moran too is the $4 million, it's not like a bank breaking number, especially for a team that doesn't spend money. They can definitely afford to add that to the payroll. But he hasn't, due to injury, we didn't see much of him last year. When he was on the field, he was productive at the plate, but he had multiple injuries and then a short season the previous year. Like, you haven't seen this guy play a ton of baseball for you as of late. Are you okay with committing that money to him? So,
that's one point. It kind of reminds me of Francisco Cervelli a little bit, like towards the end of his career with the Pirates. He was going to be earning more money, and he wasn't being as productive, and he had the injuries. So it's kind of like, to relate it to the Steelers, same reason they didn't pay James Conner, because even though he could be productive, if you're not on the field, then why should we pay you?
Yep. It didn't look like anybody was on the field for the Steelers in Cincinnati today.
No, absolutely not. They were still in Pittsburgh.
We're going to talk about that when we come back in depth, both sides of the football, coaching, everything. Everything went wrong today for the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're going to talk about that when we come back to Surround the 412 on the BK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. And welcome back to Around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I am Smitty. That is Tyler. So the Steelers, what can we even say about this? I mean, this was an embarrassment from start to finish. Just 60 minutes of domination from the Cincinnati Bengals. They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 41-10 yesterday. I mean, where do we even want to start with this? Because, okay, let's start. Is there positives to take away from this? Pat Freiermuth, sixth touchdown of his rookie season. He's got 5 in the last 5 games. Chris Boswell, 1-for-1 on field goals, 1-for-1 on point afters. Presley Harvin had a nice punt. Minkah Fitzpatrick got an interception. Maybe that leads to, you know, a streak there or something. You get one, he gets a bunch. I don't know. Other than that, everything went wrong. Everything was horrible about this football game for one football team. Cincinnati did everything well. Pittsburgh did everything terribly. Nobody wanted to tackle. That's been an issue weeks and weeks and weeks. They were giving up 8 yards a carry, it seemed like, especially on first down. I mean, Cincinnati was getting into these second and short, third and short, and putting Pittsburgh in second and long, third and long situations. And that's how you win football games, is having those short to go situations. Really bad stuff in all facets.
Yeah, it reminds me of their first meeting, except the Bengals just escalated it a little bit more. In their first meeting, I think the final score was 24-10, I believe. So similar with the Steelers, but the Bengals, I feel like this week just put more together on offense, and they figured out, oh, hey, the Steelers suck at running the ball, like we've said in these past, or they suck at stopping the run, like we've said over these past weeks. And Joe Mixon just had a day on the Steelers. He ran for a career high, 165 yards, two touchdowns, 5.9 yards per carry, which honestly seems low if you were actually watching the game.
Yeah.
And it was all facets. They were just outclassed, except for maybe Joe or Chris Boswell. He's still solid. That's still one positive takeaway. Chris Boswell is the top three kicker in the league still. Anyway, the Steelers never showed up. Like, from the opening kickoff, they were not even in the same football stadium as the Bengals. It looked like they were just not mentally prepared for this game. The Bengals were hyped up. It looked like they knew this was a division matchup. This was an important game. All the standings are so important right now, especially for how close everybody is. And it looked like the Steelers didn't care, and they didn't have an answer for it, and they just had no idea what they were doing in the game on both sides of the ball. It was absolutely pathetic, and we've been harping on the offense all season, but I don't think it's a stretch to say the defense right now is playing worse than the offense.
That's what I was going to say. That's honestly what I was going to say, is the strength of this football team, if they were going to compete this year, need to be the defense. Now, this could change. They could be even worse. I would expect that this number is going to change. At least at one point today when they showed the graphic, this team was 22nd in total defense. That's unacceptable. That's not the recipe for success for this Steelers team. They need to be really good, probably a top 10 unit on the defensive side of the football, and complement that with an offense that kept their defense and the other team's offense off the field by running the football and being a balanced offense. And they're doing neither of those things. But what we really thought would happen at the very least, and they showed it in game one, was a defense that could help them compete in football games. 41 on the road to Cincinnati in an AFC North matchup. It's unacceptable. I know they didn't have Joe Hayden today. I know TJ Watt is definitely not healthy, and he was getting triple teamed today. But that, to me, look at the difference. That, so you brought up that first Cincinnati matchup. No TJ Watt or Alex Highsmith in that. That was supposed to be like the key as to why they would be able to compete in this football game, is because they have that pass rush back. I didn't see it. I mean, they got a little bit of a presence from the inside. I know Wormley had a sack. Cam Hayward had a sack. And I know TJ, obviously not healthy. Credit to him for playing through it. But, I mean, if he's hitting triple team, Danny's not healthy. He's not going to have much of an impact. You got to have other guys step up. The linebackers, middle linebackers, still stink. James Pierre, I feel bad for the dude, because he's a nice developmental piece. He's got all the traits that you want in a project corner with that size and things that you can't teach. He should not be playing as much as he is right now, and he was getting absolutely exposed today by Joe Burrow. He was getting picked on, quite literally. He was looking where he was on the field and throwing that direction.
It makes me miss Steven Nelson on this team. And it makes me think back, like, I understand that they didn't have Hayden playing and that TJ could be still injured, but did this defense, are they really missing, like, Bud Dupree, Steven Nelson, and Mike Hilton, who... big pick six today. Yeah. About as big of a soul That's crusher six. For the Steelers as you can yep. get. But are they really missing all these players that much? Like, I was expecting the defense to be a little worse than last year, but I wasn't expecting it to be this bad. And I yep. still think there's a lot of good players on this defense. I still think that, like, Alex Highsmith, I thought has been a great replacement in case of Bud Dupree. But he hasn't been Bud Dupree, let's be honest. And I think that we weren't expecting this much of a drop off defensively in going into the season. And if they were going to do anything in the season, like you said, the defense had to carry them there, because we knew the offense was not going to be able to do so with the young offensive line, the limitations that Ben has at quarterback. We weren't expecting the play calling to be as terrible as it is. The defense needed to step up and keep them in games. And they just aren't doing that. Honestly, they're keeping them out of games. They cannot, because the right. defense yeah. cannot stop the run. If a team has a solid running game like they had with Joe Mixon against the Bengals, the game's over. They can't stop it, and they're missing Tyson Alualu a lot up the middle in that facet. And we mentioned the linebackers missing them, but I don't care if it's Chris Wormley, Loudermilk, whoever's in there. The linebackers should not be as bad as they are because Tyson Alualu is not playing. I mean, they're just playing so unacceptable right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you look at obviously you have the drop off in personnel from 19 to 20 to 21 now. That's kind of just the way that it goes. But I think that we're really seeing Teeth Butler's steam get exposed when you don't have that high level talent literally at every single level like the Steelers have had the previous 2 years compared to this year. And even though that personnel has changed and you don't have that same level of talent, I'm not just questioning the talent. Like, I'm questioning the guy's will to play football right now at times. And it just doesn't look like guys, they don't have the heart. They're getting outclassed in every single facet. These guys don't want to tackle. How is literally every player across the board tackling at a worse rate this year than last year? That just doesn't make sense to me. How is the turnover regression as steep as it is this year compared to the last 2 years? They were due for some regression there, no doubt. I mean, turnovers are such a high variance thing. But the level that it's at right now, I mean, the Steelers themselves have not turned the football over much. I know that they did a couple times today, but they were a -2 going into today in turnover differential, even though they themselves only turned the football over 8 times the entire season, mm-hmm. which means they only created 6 turnovers prior to today. So 7 now. It's
completely different than we've seen the past couple of years. They've had a lot of turnovers or takeaways, I guess it would be. But I just don't know what that is. At that point, is it Keith Butler? Is it the coaching? Because it's not just like one or two players.
There's enough blame to go around.
That it could be mental mistakes. It's literally the entire unit of the defense does not want to tackle.
And how about, listen, Mike Tomlin, and he should, you know, shoulder a lot of this for people because he himself, and you got to give him credit for doing so, like whether he's biting the bullet for Keith Butler or I don't know, came out and said like how much of a hand he has in this defense. Okay, well, if that's the case, if you're going to get praise when they're playing well, you got to get that same, you know, criticism when they're not. And what we've seen now these last few weeks, and to be honest with you, a good portion of the season, I know guys have been in and out and everything like that, but what we've seen from this defense for a good portion of the season, it's not up to that standard. I know that they're going to say that themselves. I really don't care what they have to say at this point. The words don't mean anything. Go out and show it to me on Sunday or, you know, some of these games down the stretch. They have a Thursday night game, Monday night game. Show them whatever day of the week that you're playing, because I'm just sick of hearing what they have to say in these press conferences. I will say what I did like hearing is TJ Watt actually use the word embarrassing, because you really don't hear players say that. They seem to shy away from wanting to use that word for whatever reason. TJ Watt said that the defense has been embarrassing as of late. So,
well,
whether
good.
It's going to amount to anything, I don't know.
He's taken after his brother last year when his brother was talking about the Texans. They're absolutely right. It is embarrassing. And they got to take responsibility for that. But to move to the offensive side of the ball, one thing to me that is also embarrassing, and I understand the offensive line sucks, but they only ran Najee 8 times. He only had 23 yards. And it sucks whenever you do not have a running back in a running game that can carry your offense like the way we saw Joe Mixon do and the Bengals do. Because the talent that Najee is, we should be able to rely on him as just a workhorse, but we can't because he cannot get anywhere. And it's funny because we were saying earlier this year, like the Cincinnati defense, we thought they were improved, but we didn't think we were this much improved. And they are just completely shutting down the Steelers offense in both games that they played against them.
Yeah. Well, I was just saying too, the thing with Najee Harris is they haven't been able to get to that game because they're out of the game so early that like game script makes them just have to throw the ball, you know, as many times they have to try to play catch up. Like Najee Harris has been iced out of the game due to game script now multiple weeks in a row. And it's just, we know what the Steelers' plan coming into this season was. Let's play really good defense. Let's find a way to get the running game back in Pittsburgh. And, you know, that's how we're going to try to compete in football games. They're not able to do either one of those things right now.
No, and we still had a couple guys offensively have a nice day. Deontay Johnson did his thing. He had, almost 10 catches again for almost 100 yards.
Listen, he's going to see – he had, going into today, the 5th most targets per game in the NFL. I mean, you can pretty much bank on him for 7 and 75, like, every single week. You know, and I'm really like, he's on the cusp of becoming a star in this league, quite frankly. If you just watch him and try to isolate what he's doing from the quarterback play that's kind of hampering him. I mean, if the Steelers can hit pretty early on their next quarterback, I'm very excited for Deontay Johnson's future.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of defenses are going to start to key on that, especially this year, the remaining part of the season with the offense. If you take out Deontay Johnson, you're taking out pretty much half of their offense. So, I mean, another guy that had a nice day, like Chase Claypool, like three for 82 on a box score. Yeah, but like I saw your tweet earlier, and it was like, why is he falling down? And I agree. Like, I don't know why he just falls down all the time.
He has no contact balance. Like, in some of the times, it doesn't even look like there's contact being made. People were, like, complaining about a defensive pass interference call that they wanted in the end zone. I'm like, listen, Chase is, like, going around the guy with, like, a swim move looking type thing and just falls down. Is he trying to
just top heavy? Is that really
it? I was just saying, is he trying to draw a pass interference? Because if that's the case, I mean, you're giving up on the play, and if they don't call it, you know, I mean, that's quite the risk to take, and one that I wouldn't want my football player to take.
Exactly.
So I don't know what if it's intentional or not, but yeah, his contact balance is god awful. that entire stat line is based off really two catches that he made.
He also
had a couple of drops and a 15-yard face mask penalty where, I don't know, for whatever reason, he got into like a spat with one of the defensive backs. The next play, he lines up against the same guy and just rips his helmet off. I mean,
yeah, and it was after a big play for the Steelers, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and they needed a first down.
Pat Freiermuth, offensively, still had another nice day. 4 for 40 and a touchdown. But as you mentioned, he out with maybe a concussion.
Yeah, they said it was a head injury, so obviously it's a concussion. I mean, we've seen guys be able to return from that, obviously, within a week. So, I mean, they need him. First off, they're already out Eric Ebron, who was put on IR. I mean, Zach Gentry, Kevin Rader, that would be the next in line at tight end. They need Pat Freiermuth next week against the Ravens to have – I mean, they just lost by 31 points. So, people might laugh at me when I say any type of shot, but seriously, like, if they want any type of shot in this football game, even if the defense does show up, I feel like Pat Freiermuth has to be a go, because I have no idea how you even – we talked about, like, replacing Juju in third and short situations and in the red zone with Pat Freiermuth. Now, all of a sudden, if Pat Freiermuth were out of the equation, like, what? Now what?
Honestly, I have no clue. More Zach Gentry, maybe. But still, if Pat Freiermuth's not in the game, I think you can argue that that's your second best offensive weapon out of the game after Deontay Johnson. And as much as I want to say Najee Harris is one of the top two, I think that the offensive line is the reason he's not. He would be if he could get some blocking holes and get some lanes to run through, but he can't. So I can't really say that Najee is going to be a top three or a top two weapon in the game. I think he's number three for sure, just because of his pure raw talent, but he just gets no help.
Yeah, as a running back, I mean, that might be the answer. They have to just use him more of a receiver than anything else if Freiermuth's out. I don't know. Maybe some pony formation. We see McFarland on the field too. He got on the field a little bit today. Didn't show really anything. He was also the return guy, the kick return guy. I mean, I don't know. It's too hard to say because it's just such a small sample size, but I'm in the same boat where, you know, a question I proposed on here a couple weeks ago where I'm thinking they got to invest in a back sooner rather than later if they want to preserve Najee Harris. And that's still my line of thinking.
What did you think of Ben Roethlisberger's performance today? I know I didn't want to gloat, but however, I did say on last week's show that everybody reacting to his performance, saying he's QB1 and that he still has it. I myself was not as so sure that he still had it. I thought it was a great performance last week against the Chargers, but this week I think it shows more of what Ben Roethlisberger currently is than last week did. And it's not that he gets much help from the line anyway, but I can't. It's going to sound terrible, but I can't wait for this season to be over and him to just retire. I'm just ready for the new.
I mean, not that I'm not along with you in like, I'm ready to start the next, again, like I'm ready to start throwing darts and trying to find the next guy at quarterback as soon as possible. But it's like, Ben is still for me, not at the top of the pecking order in terms of that. And I think last week was his best football game of the season, obviously by far. It very well could be his best at the end of the season. We're still saying that was the best performance. But I also think while last week was above his level of play that we're going to see the rest of the way, today was like much lower than what we've seen as well. So I think that what he actually is at this point is probably in the middle somewhere. And I'm still of the mindset that even despite where he's at physically with his limitations and everything like that, if we had the problem is we don't have the ecosystem around him, but if we did, I still think that this football team could succeed with a guy exactly like that at quarterback, but we don't have that. And because of that, it really magnifies what those limitations are from him.
Yeah, and going the rest of the way, you're not getting any easier on defense.
Yeah, it's not.
you're playing a lot of really good teams. Literally, you know, the rest of the season.
Back, but he's not going to help that run defense all that much, I don't think. So,
no, yeah. Maybe he could switch to wide receiver and help the offense. You know, Pat Freiermuth goes down. Maybe he could be the third down target.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we move Hayden to safety and Edmonds to off. Edmonds is kind of built like he could. Maybe do something on offense, get him the ball.
Possibly. But, you know, I started to think as I was watching this game, are the Steelers what I thought they were at the beginning of the season? Like how I was the first 4 weeks? Were those like 3 weeks of winning games, was that just like because they were playing bad teams? And, I mean, they beat the Browns, but even still, like beating the Seahawks, and Browns, and Bears.
Probably their second best defensive performance outside of the opener against the Bills was that game in Cleveland.
Yeah, but then you tie with the Lions, you lose to the Chargers. I mean, it's a great offensive performance against the Chargers, but the defense still terrible. And then you have this week, which is, I mean, by far their worst performance of the entire season. I'm scared that they're trending back to more so what I thought they were in week 2 and 3 of this season than what I thought they were 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, they're definitely trending in the wrong direction. I guess the only question is there enough talent on the team to get back to at least somewhere in the middle? Yeah, they probably overachieved in those weeks, and it's, you know, playing the Broncos, the Seahawks without Russ. I mean, yeah, there were certainly some games in there that, you know, given different circumstances, they probably don't win. But that's the way the NFL goes. I mean, for a while, we were starting to look at that Chiefs game like, man, are the Chiefs going to be a bad football team by the time that we roll around that day after Christmas? Are they going to be nowhere near what we thought they were as a football team? I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I know it's such a cliche, but literally like any given Sunday, like they could go out. What if the Steelers, we're not expecting them to, but say the Steelers go out and somehow just absolutely beat up on the Ravens next week. You know, does that could change our minds again. I mean,
the Ravens stink. Let's be honest. They're the worst 7-4 team I've ever seen in my entire life.
You know, what's funny about that though, is like, it's the same thing. When I was seeing people say that on Twitter, and you know, they haven't impressed me, that's for sure, at 7-4. But it's like last year when the Steelers were 11-0 and everyone from the outside was saying the same things about the Steelers, like, yeah, they're undefeated, but it's pretty identifiable that there's a lot of things that are being masked right now just by that record. They're not that great of a football team. And Steeler fans didn't want to hear that. Like, we're 11-0, nothing else matters. That's like, the Ravens are 7-4. That's all that matters.
Well, they're currently like 7-3. We're actually predicting the future that they're going to lose since we're recording this on Sunday. And they play the Sunday Night Football.
Oh, okay.
They're 7-3 right now. I accidentally said 7-4. So maybe they are 7-4, whenever you guys are listening to this.
Or they could be 8-3, and then we'll be talking about them being the
worst. It's funny because I was literally like the people that were saying the Steelers were frauds last year. I think the Ravens are kind of frauds, maybe not as big as the Steelers were based off of the end of the Steelers season last year and what we've seen going into this season. But when you look at the game, it took a 66-yard field goal against the Lions to win that game. Not that to say they wouldn't have won it anyway, but literally they won it on the world record field goal. They were losing by 2 touchdowns to Minnesota. Minnesota just blew that game, blew it in overtime. And then against the Bears had the lead going into the fourth quarter and just couldn't hold on to it. And these are not good teams that they're squeaking out wins against. It would be different if they're squeaking out. Yeah. So I feel like they're just not as good as they thought we were. We swept them last year. If they sweep them this year, then great. Do I think that'll happen? Probably not, but I just don't think the Ravens are as good as we think they are, or people think they are. At least Ravens fans think they are. And next week's matchup, I think, should be a good one. Lamar Jackson's worst games have always come against the Pittsburgh defense, but they have not played the Steelers when the Pittsburgh defense is performing this bad, especially against the run, which the Ravens should thrive in. So next week's game, as much as I want to say the Steelers can be in this game, it might get ugly if the defense looked like it did today.
Well, all right, let's give our predictions then. And then we'll switch to some hockey talk and talk about the Pens to wrap up the show in the next segment. Be a little bit better, I feel like. We do have to talk about an injury, but all right. So let's go. Predictions for Steelers Ravens next Sunday at Heinz Field, 4 o'clock start.
Yeah, that's a little odd one. I'm gonna say that the Steelers are gonna lose this one. Oh, I know. Wow. it's really a bombshell right there. And I'm gonna say that the score is going to be 34-17. I think the offense gets another touchdown, like unlike they did against the Bengals, but I still think that it's going to be a repeat of the defense's performance. I just don't think that they're going to be able to figure out stopping the run within that week. And against the Ravens, that is what they do. Literally everybody, including their running back that they have playing quarterback. So, yeah, it's not going to be pretty.
I'm going to go 31-17 Ravens.
We're pretty close then. Off by a field goal.
Yeah.
We're at least on the same mindset.
I just don't think that, listen, in the past, the Steelers have had the personnel to shut down Lamar Jackson. I'm not so sure that that's the case this year.
If the Steelers have any chance of winning this game, I feel like a lot of that is going to be coming from self-inflicted mistakes on the Ravens' part, fumbles, turnovers. They're going to need that to stay in this game. And they've gotten that in their past matchups, especially when Lamar Jackson has been quarterback. He's turned the ball over the most against the Steelers. I think it's like, what, 5 fumbles and 9 turnovers total. So it hasn't been pretty for him, but the Steelers are definitely going to need some help if they want any chance of winning this game.
Yeah, I don't think that they have the personnel at this point to pull it off. But hey, go prove me wrong. All right, when we come back on around the 412, we're going to wrap up the show, talk about some Pittsburgh Penguins hockey. Casey DeSmith was in net on Saturday. Did it lead to anything different? No, but we're going to talk about it more in depth when we come back. This is around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. Back to around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I am Smitty. That is Tyler. For some reason, I almost said that reverse and called myself Tyler. I'm not Tyler. I am Smitty. Let's talk about some Pittsburgh Penguins hockey to wrap up the show. Let's just look on the surface first and foremost. 3-1 since we last recorded. They finished up a Canadian road trip, sweeping that road trip, beating the Jets to cap that off. How about the play of Tristan Jarry over this stretch of hockey, though? Even the one loss that we're going to talk about here, he was not in net for. It was Casey DeSmith on Saturday night. So Tristan Jarry, I mean, we can kind of just continue our conversation that we had last week talking about the Pens, because Tristan Jarry, a guy that a lot of people were worried about coming into the season, we didn't go out and get a goaltender, and that was everybody pressing the panic button on the season before it started. This guy's been really good. I think he's been a top 5 goaltender, to be honest with you, so far this season.
Yeah, I'm looking at the games that he's recently played, and he's only ended up 2 goals in his last 5 games.
And the other 3 are shutouts.
Yeah, exactly. I think that he's been stellar this season. It was a big question mark going into the season, but I've said it on the show many times. He's impressed me. He's the reason that the Penguins were not in as big of a hole as they could have been whenever the team finally started to get healthy and to get everybody back. And I think that it's been great to have him. But on the flip side of things, Casey DeSmith, another bad performance overall against the Montreal Canadiens on Saturday. You were there. What did you see from Casey DeSmith, like, from a performance standpoint, that, like, could you see anything? Like, why is this not, guy just not figuring it out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that he was the reason that they lost on Saturday, to be quite honest with you. I think that they got goalied on the other end of it by Jake Allen, who stopped 47 of 50 shots. I mean, that's insane to get 50 shots on net and lose the game, but hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. I think that the Penguins had a flurry of shots. There was a point in that game where they had like a 2-minute offensive zone possession, and they could have scored 3 or 4 times within that, and Jake Allen robbed them 3 or 4 times. As far as Casey DeSmith goes, I don't think that he's all there. I don't know if it's, you know, the same as like the injury that he suffered last year that kept him from, you know, spelling Tristan Jarry in the playoffs or whatever, and that's still like hampering him. I don't know. This guy has not looked the same going back to the training camp, the preseason, the regular season. He's now 0-3-1 on the year. I don't think he was the problem, but I think that he is a problem. Anytime that he plays in a game, I feel less confident. And that's not just because Tristan Jarry is playing at such a high level right now. I think it's Casey Smith playing at such a low level right now. I think that he's just lacking confidence. Like right now, the best thing about Tristan Jarry is he just looks really confident, right? He just looks completely different. Getting out to the top of his crease, challenging shooters, cutting down angles. That's the exact opposite of what you see from Casey DeSmith right now. He looks like he is just sitting back in his cage and hoping to stop a puck and not wanting to challenge anything.
You know, and it's the opposite of what I thought was going to be pushing Tristan Jarry to be a better goaltender. I had thought that this offseason they should have brought in somebody to at least be a 1B to the 1A of Tristan Jarry to push him and make him think that, okay, Matt, like when we had Matt Murray still here, who actually just got waived by the Senators, by the way, F's in chat. Yeah. I think that I was surprised. I'm surprised that it takes Casey DeSmith performing bad for Tristan Jarry to perform well. I thought he needed somebody behind him to push him to be better. And last year he didn't have that. He only had Casey DeSmith, and we knew that he wasn't going to be contending for the starting spot. So it was different circumstances. This year he still doesn't have that, but he's performing way better than he did last season. And he's just been a very good goaltender, the hottest goaltender in the league right now. Believe it or not, people, but I think that he's been a huge part of winning these games. And when we talked about whenever the Penguins, they lost 2 or 3 in a row a few weeks ago, they were in last place in the division. Now they've risen to fourth place in the division. They've got 24 points through 21 games. And they're
in a wild card spot right now.
Yep, they're getting themselves in a nice spot. And we're only about a quarter of the season into the way, so We've got a lot of hockey left, and the Penguins are trending in the right direction from where they started the season, for sure.
I guess the only thing that I'm worried about with Tristan Jarry at this point is Casey DeSmith's performance going to affect Tristan Jarry? And what I mean by that is Tristan Jarry's workload going to be so high that he's not fresh down the stretch, and you know he's a product of that, having to play way too many games. Right now, no goalie has played more minutes than Tristan Jarry has this year.
It could be. I definitely think that teams this or nowadays, they like to split time more so than just having a sole starter and barely any starters for the backup. But perhaps Tristan Jarry is a goaltender that will thrive on that. I don't know. I know that he might get tired and wear out. But it's not an ideal situation that you just want the goalie to play that much. But I think maybe the more he plays, the more and more confidence he has, and maybe that actually helps Tristan Jarry. I don't know. I'm trying to look on the bright side of that situation, because unless Casey DeSmith turns it around, I just don't see him playing all that much throughout the season. He's going to be playing maybe once every 4 or 5 games.
Whenever they have a back-to-back situation, that's pretty much it right now. But I think that the thing is, if they don't have enough confidence in Casey DeSmith, you know, as we get closer to the trade deadline and the Pens are still in a playoff position, I wouldn't rule out them going and getting a goalie. I know that it's not all that common to go get like goaltending help when you already have your number one, but Hextall, I know that he likes to keep, you know, his trade chips. But I don't think it would be all that expensive to go out and get a serviceable backup goaltender. They might try in-house first with Louis Domingue. We kind of touched on that, but I don't know. I don't know that if Casey DeSmith isn't the answer, I'm not so sure that they have an in-house option for who could be the backup to Tristan Jarry and take some of that workload off.
Yeah, Casey DeSmith. So the Penguins have played 21 games. He's only played four. He started in four, and he has three losses because I believe the one went to a shootout, so it doesn't count for the goalie. But, I mean, he's goals against average, 4.33. Now, I know the save percentage is 867, and that's alarming, but as a backup, it's not as big of a thing, I think, just because of how many shots he's facing. It's not as many, but, I mean, the 4.33 goals against, that's alarming to me. I mean, he's just letting in way too many goals.
That's the thing. It's like we can't put all the blame on him, but it's the same team that's playing in front of Tristan Jarry. Like, that hasn't really changed. I know that they've gotten a little bit healthier as of late, but and we got to touch on that. Good thing I reminded myself they're talking. But, you know, overall, it's the same team playing in front of both of these guys. I know that he can't be the entire issue, but there's obviously something there. Because if you can pin it back to games that Tristan Jarry's starting, to games that Casey Smith is starting right now, I mean, not every night can be a night where the Pens just don't have it, or they're getting goal lead on the other end of it, like it was on Saturday with Jake Allen.
Yeah. Is Jake Allen a big goalie? How tall is he? Did they get big goalied? Because I remember Danny said before that the Penguins get big goalied a lot, where they just can't score on a big-bodied guy.
Oh, really? Jake Allen's 6'2", 195.
Okay, so it's not like Markstrom.
Oh, my goodness. Markstrom is unbelievable. Calgary is unbelievable this year, largely because of Markstrom. Five shutouts already.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, every
Casey
third game
is missed
right
on his trail, though.
Yeah. Okay, so like I said, there is an injury to talk about here. Brian Rust going on IR for the second time this season with a lower body injury. What's really weird about this is he took the pregame skate. He was actually a late scratch. Was it the game Thanksgiving Eve, I believe, on Wednesday? He was out there for the pregame skate, and then he gets scratched from the lineup. Or no, it was Friday. It would have been Friday. On Friday, he takes the pregame skate before the game against the Islanders, and then gets healthy scratch. Brian Boyle enters the lineup. Evan Rodriguez jumps up on the top line and has been Evan Rodriguez of 2021.
Evan Rodriguez, so. Dog.
Yeah. He's unreal, been so honestly, good. What he's doing. So Brian Rust goes back onto IR. This stinks. I mean, we were just talking about how they were getting healthier, really just missing Evgeny Malkin right now. Now Brian Rust is back on the shelf.
Yeah, and listen, this is going to sound very cynical, but is there going to be a huge drop-off in play from the Penguins without missing Brian Rust? Like, he hasn't done much this season.
He hasn't, but he just scored a power play goal in the last game that he played, and you kind of felt like, okay, maybe that's like the start of something there. Not just for the power play, which, by the way, they've really struggled, but for Brian Rust himself to start doing something. I mean, him, Sid, and Jake, that's a really good trio. They haven't gotten to play a lot together this year. We've seen Sid and Jake kind of, you know, turn it up. Sid with 3 points, even in a loss on Saturday night. But, you know, was it about to be Rust's turn to really start getting going? We don't know, because now he's on the shelf again. But yeah, just from that standpoint, I think that they're obviously a better team when Brian Rust is in the lineup, because then you can drop down a guy like Evan Rodriguez to the third or fourth line. But what I will say is, I don't think that there's an issue elevating Evan Rodriguez into that role. It's more so about now you have Brian Boyle in the lineup as opposed to Brian Rust. But as far as just Evan Rodriguez jumping up, I don't think that there's a huge drop off there, at least from what we've seen with Evan Rodriguez this year.
No, he's been so good. And on Saturday, he probably had one of his best games that he's had in his career.
Yeah.
He had 14 shot attempts. I mean, the dude's been unreal, especially offensively. He's second on the team in points with 15, 8 goals so far. I don't think
I
we could
wait
have
for him to be an all-star game snub.
I don't think we could ask for much more than what we thought we were getting. I think we were wondering, is this guy going to even be in the like roster when everybody's healthy, and who's going to be like the 12th forward? But he's for sure in the roster, at least right now. He's been playing out of his mind, and he's been really pleasantly surprising, so to say the least, this season. The only thing that I would say so far, and this is like not obviously Sidney Crosby is great. He's amazing still. I just want him to start scoring more. I don't know what it is.
He did score a goal and two assists on Saturday, but that game Friday, I was like, man, he's just snake bitten right now. I mean, he hits the post, he has a breakaway and doesn't score, and then he gets robbed another time. I mean,
and it's different these past few games than it was this first couple of games back. His first couple of games back, I just didn't think he was playing that well. Maybe shaking the rust off or whatever. Mm-hmm. Punny. But I think that he's been playing well these past few games. It's just, it's kind of like Kapanen or Jake early on, like just nothing's going in for him.
You know what I think is probably the biggest area where I'm seeing that he doesn't look like he's all the way back is in the faceoff circle. I mean, you're even seeing it on the power play. They're having Carter take a lot of the faceoffs as opposed to him. Or even like if it's a critical defensive zone draw, they'll start out with, you know, Carter and Crosby on the ice, or Bluter and Crosby, have them take the draw and then hurry up and get off the ice for the additional winger.
Maybe he needed a bad wrist to win more faceoffs. Because his faceoff percentage is 40.8%.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't looked at that number, but it's nice to know it's not just my eyes that are, you know, the eye test, the old eye test that everybody.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Carter's 55.3, Bluger's 53.5, Evan Rodriguez is at 50%. Yeah, it's been pretty low for Sid so far. Brian Boyle is even higher than Sid. But I don't know. Maybe he'll figure it out. I'm not worried about Sidney Crosby. I know we know how good he is. He'll figure it out.
I'm not worried about him. I just think that that's probably the one area where, to me, it's been the most noticeable without diving into anything, that you can see the limitations there, that he's still shaking off roster, however you want to put it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I know that they just lost on Saturday, but I'm still feeling really good about this team right now. Drew O'Connor does come up in place of Brian Rust. Whether he'll crack the lineup, I'm not sure. They could continue to just roll with Boyle being back in the lineup at center and Dom Simone and Heinen flanking him. We'll see how that all pans out. But
yeah, and so you mentioned how good Markstrom was playing and how good the Calgary Flames have been playing. We play them tonight. Strap up, Penguins fans. It's going to be a tough game.
9 o'clock start, though, so make sure you get the coffee going because it's a really late one.
And we have the Oilers on Wednesday and the Canucks on Saturday. So we're back up in Canada.
Those are all late games, huh? I think Edmonton's at 10.
Edmonton is at 10, and then the Canucks is also at 10.
Yeah, so a lot of late nights coming up this week, or I should say on the West or East Coast, at least. West Coast, not too bad.
Yep. So only three games this week, but they're against.
On the East Coast. I just assume that everybody's in the same time zone as me when I'm talking a lot of these times.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of Penguins fans that are in the same time zone as these games are happening. Maybe some of them listening will even be there.
Yeah. And shout out to those people along with everybody else. East Coast, West Coast, Central, doesn't matter. Wherever you're at, we appreciate you tuning in to this episode of Around the 412. Last thing I want to say, we are getting closer and closer to the end of Rocking Around the 412. I have the mission set to deactivate or delete, however you want to say it, on the 16th of December, just because I need that final period of time to know exactly the amount that I have to work with. We already have three families. If you know of a family, please reach out to us, because at the minimum, we're going to be able to help six families this year. We've raised over $6,000 so far. A lot of the stuff, I don't want to like move my camera around or move any stuff around. I'm literally sitting in front of a ton of Amazon boxes right now because the stuff has started rolling in. I've already went and got the gift wrapping paper. So it's going to be, I love this time of year. It's my favorite time of year. I'm so excited to really get rolling with the stuff even more. Shout out to our producer of the show, Eddie Provident. I think he's going to dress as Santa, and we're going to go and deliver some of this stuff by hand this year. So I'm excited to do that as well.
Santa's beard is red this year.
If you guys want to get involved, it's our pinned tweet on our Twitter at Around the 412. It has the GoFundMe link right there. You can go and read the entire mission, where the money is going. Every single penny donated goes to these families. And in return, we give you guys the opportunity to win some really cool prizes. All that stuff is also listed on our Twitter. Also, right now, tentatively, hopefully this is able to happen. We were talking about getting five people together. This could change. Wednesday, December 8th, time to be announced. Us two and the Yinzers, the girls from Yinzers, are going to do a live auction show. So I bought five more items from Pristina Auctions. We're going to do a live show where we show you guys the items. You guys have a little bit of a bidding war in the comments. We move on to the next item once that item is paid for. Probably have a little bit of a countdown as well. We'll decide how we're going to do it. Either way, We are very excited for that. Same thing. All proceeds will go to the Rockin' Around the 412 mission. So, I think that's all I got for this week. You got anything else?
Let's go Steelers. I mean,
here we go Steelers and let's go Pens. You brought up the Pens schedule. The Steelers obviously play the Ravens, and then they have a short week against Minnesota.
Thursday Night Football in Minnesota. Yep.
Fun times ahead. We said it wasn't going to get easier. They're really going to be tested now. So we'll see. Trial by fire. Either way, let's go
it's
Pens.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Here we go Steelers. Let's go Bucks. Let's just throw that in there as well. Might as well. Shout out to the Pitt Panthers winning the Coastal. 10 wins for the first time in 40-plus years. Let's go win the ACC and then the bowl game and have 12 wins for the first time in 45 years, I believe. Something like that.
Sheesh.
Yeah, making history. Shout out to Kenny Heisman as well as Jordan Addison, who should win the Blitnikoff. I know we don't talk about college football or college sports all that much on here, but had to get that out of the way. Also, Pitt basketball, terrible program. That's what we're stopping. I said it like, you know why I said, yeah, I'll say. I had to give Starch a little bit of a shout out here at the end. He wanted me to say. But hey, let us know what you guys think in the comments. We asked you guys a couple questions throughout, so let us know your feedback on that. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's where you're listening. Leave a like on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel for this show, all the other great shows on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network, plus player interviews, just daily sports content. You don't need to go anywhere else. We got it all right here for you. Other than that, it's been Smitty. It's been Tyler. This is Around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network.